And welcome to the Sound of Economics podcast from Bruegel, the Brussels-based economic policy think tank. I'm Sean Gibson, and joining me for today's episode are Julio Faura, Global Head of Innovation at Banco Santander.
Hello.
And Johan Paulscher, Associate Professor at the Delft University of Technology and the founder of Tribler, a peer-to-peer service.
Hello.
Today we're here to discuss blockchain with particular reference for its future in the EU. So if we could start at the beginning, there are a lot of people that still don't understand blockchain. And perhaps, Julio, using the example of Alastria in Spain, what is Alastria first and foremost, and how does it use blockchain?
Well, the case of Alastria, it's really a practical case, a practical implementation of a blockchain network, right? So essentially what we wanted is to implement a blockchain network and make all the big corporations, small corporations, universities, public administration, and all startups, you know, innovators, everybody, have the, you know, get the possibility to participate, right? Fire up a node and just be part of the network. It's really nothing more than that. The idea is that we all together can create this blockchain network, which is decentralized, right? It's not controlled by a single body. It is controlled by, it's delegated. Control is delegated to a set of members who run validator nodes, like 25 or 30 of them. And therefore, the network does not depend, it's not, the administration is not done by a single body. And what it provides really is really a shared platform. It's a shared computing platform. That's really what it is. The idea is that we can all run applications. They are decentralized applications in the sense that they are like programs that any of the members can put into the platform, and all of the other members can access them, right? So it really resembles kind of a shared supercomputer where we can collaboratively run any kind of applications with universal access and full auditability, right? So we can all see what we want, and therefore it does not depend on any individual party doing things right.
Right. If we can move to you, Johan, perhaps could you explain and perhaps elaborate on how blockchain has a relationship with the issue of trust for a user? Perhaps the example of Uber, the app, could be a good basis for this.
Yeah, that is a fascinating question. One of the big challenges we have currently online is how to create trust and how to do transactions safely, securely, and fast. And then we see that the blockchain really creates a new era where you don't need to trust a central bank or a government. You can just type in some code, and then if you type in the right code, which is one of the most fascinating constructs, if you type in certain 12 words, you can recover a wallet, and suddenly you have millions of euros if somebody prepared that or sent that to you. So 12 words can unlock a big wallet. This is, and you don't need to trust anybody except mathematics. And this is something which is a very big innovation, but it doesn't help the world economy much. This is for unregulated entities and drug markets or all this criminal behavior, because it doesn't utilize legally binding contracts. It's outside the current economic realm mostly. But the technology of how to make transactions faster and this web of validators, all these things. What my research group is doing, or the whole blockchain lab together with other professors, so we're 8 professors who are trying to put the blockchain into real-world use. And our focus is really solving this problem of trust on a global scale. We have Uber, where we get into the car of a stranger who has not undergone a criminal background check, who has not been given a government license in many cases. It's just somebody who has a star rating. And because the stars are sufficient, we sort of trust them. And when we install apps on our phone, We go to the Google market and we see if it has thousands of five-star ratings, then everybody loves it, clearly. And we just install it too. And this loser with 2 stars by just 10 people, we completely ignore it. So that creates a different type of society where you prove performance instead of giving monopolies or granted things. And why blockchain? So Uber, eBay, Craigslist 20 years ago, it was all like who could be trusted and how much and things. And we give them 1 star or 5 star transactions. So you have all this satisfaction record, so to say, in various markets. And we think we can generalize that. We're trying to do that in our own tribal system that we have, without any government, without any financial institution. We can create an ecosystem where you can have tokens and things which actually work. And you can give tokens, it's a YouTube-like thing. You can give tokens to artists or to the infrastructure provider if you want some more speed. And this would be the first time, and we take it in production a week ago. This is the first time we have this type of circular economy. A lot of ICO people are doing this. And we're trying to build this critical infrastructure for the future internet. Build on trust. And why blockchain? That's the tamper-proof way of recording these trust and star ratings. And so this is very strange that there is no common way of expressing trust on the internet or identifying people. It always goes through these websites. It's got hacked or down. There is no legal signature. There is no common way of contacting your bank. Everybody just does their own thing. And we don't have a global standard for trusted communication. We can just send packets on the internet. So this is really one of the grand challenges that we have. Identifiers, legal signatures, valid compliant transactions, and all these things can on top of it, if you can just build trust.
So with looking a bit further forward, particularly with an EU focus, we've seen examples of blockchain in action at member state level. Where are we up to in terms of applying blockchain-based systems on an EU-wide basis? And is the single the digital single market developed enough as it is? And what challenges are there in the future to blockchain-based activity? Julio, if we start with you.
Okay. I think. And I hate to say this, but I think the question comes a little bit too early, probably. Right? I think that what we've seen so far is really proofs of concepts. That's really, and most of these proofs of concepts, I think, are more at the technical level, and that's it, right? A few institutions have run some more production-ready, if you want, pilots, right? At least that's something we're focusing on. And last year we did some, and we do have some things working, like international payment systems that can move money from different bank accounts in different currencies in different countries in a matter of seconds. And you know they're quite spectacular, but they're still relatively early, right? In that sense, in all these experiments, we're not really changing the regulation. We're not really trying to break the regulation. We're trying to adapt to the current regulation because we are essentially, we're essentially using blockchain to digitize a little bit more efficiently the processes that we have today, right? That's mostly what we are doing, at least in the initial states, because first of all, we don't want to add more regulatory complexity to what we do. And second, because we want to check that the technology works. And third, because we want to check that there are significant benefits from decentralization and more efficient integrations and, you know, all these things. Our reasoning is that if we find a way to prove those benefits, then everybody's going to be so enthusiastic that when we really know what regulatory changes we want, we'll have a lot more power to ask for them. But it's not like, you know, we need to change regulation this way and we're pounding on the table for regulators to change it. We don't really know what we want to change. Now, the next step will be as soon as we find some use cases that are a little bit more innovative, right? A little bit more innovative. For example, related to the creation of financial securities that are tokenized on blockchains, like cash or other financial instruments. So those ideas actually do create some need for regulation. And it's not because we want to change the regulations, just because they are new things that don't have the appropriate regulation, because they didn't exist before, right? And in that sense, it will be needed to work together with regulators to find a way to regulate those things. My personal opinion is that it's not so much that the regulatory framework is ready or not. I think what we have to work better with the European Commission and in general, you know, the European community, is ways to work together on those things. For example, through the creation of sandboxes, right? So sandboxes, when we can get together, we can do the parallel experiment, we just do it, and regulators are part of the experiment through observer roles. And they understand we work together, they steer us a little bit, not officially, I mean, not like, you know, telling us to do things that will imply that the process will be compliant, right? It's not that, it's just working together, right, to try to, in the end up with something that could be sensible. And at that time, they will be able to make the decision whether this is approval, you know, approved or not from a regulatory point of view. But at that point, it will be a lot easier because they will know what we are doing. We will have adapted to take into account their concerns. And I think that is a very much a winning game. So rather than changing or substantially modifying the legal frameworks we have in the EU, I think what we probably could use more is better ways to work together with regulators in the form of sandboxes to run jointly these experiments. That's my personal opinion.
Great. Johan, where do you see the future for blockchain and more far-reaching projects?
Yeah, that's fascinating. So, yeah, where we are now is that the member states, they all want their local ecosystems and they want to get themselves on the blockchain. And then you have Russia coin, Chain coin, China coin, and all these, they all want their own thing. And that's fascinating. That's really old thinking, national thinking. Then you look at the existing winners. It's like Bitcoin is very hard to capture as an ecosystem. Only the exchanges can be legally relegated. The in and out into your national borders or your national regulated currencies. So a lot of the control reflex is fascinating what we see happening now. But the member states don't have the enablers in place to make these EU-wide platforms. That would be really fascinating if the EU would be the first, where we have these regulatory vacuums, like digitalized identity. A digital self-sovereign identity just on a smartphone, where you can do a legally binding electronic signature that legal entities, not natural persons, have a sort of a digital signature registry where everybody can see, and it's enforced by law that if you put your signature down, which you registered at the state level for your company, that it is a legally binding contract. These things are all not there yet. And so this is really all this, the smart contracts are all just a distraction, and the talk of Turing machines and efficiency and gas and all this stuff. It's just not binding. We even have trouble to create a global database of legal entities, what companies are there and what is their unique number or something. So that's fascinating. So what we look a bit further is that the blockchain is very good at bypassing local regulations. But the strange thing is that we will go a bit to a bit of a disillusionment. All the ICOs will deflate. Probably we haven't seen any one of them with a durable business model. And then all these business processes, which are all still paper-based or based on legacy infrastructure, suddenly they've become fully end-to-end digitized and reshaped. And these value chains that they get all disrupted and trust is created digitally. So in 5 or 10 years, when people don't pick up the phone to do orders anymore, we might actually have this machine-and-machine communication. We have trucks driving themselves around. Then suddenly all invoices are sent through some magic infrastructure which is trustworthy. So invoices are not just sent through the post or to a mailbox. No, they get checked automatically and they get paid within a few seconds, automatically, if it, everything was in order. If the shipment was checked, there was a photograph taken and things. So this is sort of like this trustworthiness again, that you can send something to a company, and if you delivered your goods, it's like you get your money in a few seconds. This is like, this is such a very basic building block for your economy. If you get that right, then in 10, 12 years, a lot of our economic activity will actually, instead of going through the internet, the digital checks and balances, it will go through some sort of magical blockchain, blockchain fabric, where everybody can check if contracts are fulfilled, if there's violation, quality, exception handling. And that is interesting. And that the disruption of that, that it is very likely that the majority of economic activity in 2030 will go through a blockchain. This is something which is not sinking in yet. Everybody's just still following a bit the hype of the current generation.
That's brilliant, gentlemen. That brings us to the end of the podcast, unfortunately. But thank you for listening to The Sound of Economics, and thanks to my guests, Julio Faura and Johan Paulsa. If you're interested in Bruegel's work, we have a range of blogs and papers written by our scholars available at our website, bruegel.org. I hope you'll join us again for The Sound of Economics. See you next time.